Thought I'd begin by turning to Psalm 118. Wanted to read a couple of verses out of that. And I'm going to read verse 8 and 9 of Psalm 118. Now, this is doesn't actually say a psalm of David. Oftentimes, when it is David, he will mention it, so we really don't know, but not important either way. But in verse 8 and 9, I thought this would be a good way to start this sermon. It says, verse 8, it's better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. It's better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. And it is better to trust in the Lord to put confidence in princes. Now, you know, we got invited every now and then. We would get invited to one of these seminars or whatever, financial seminars, and you know, it usually be kind of at a not that great a place, so we had no desire to go that much. But we got invited to one down at this Brazilian steakhouse, a real Brazilian steakhouse. We're thinking about going next week. Then I got to looking at the place that invited us, and I thought, I don't know about this I don't have a lot of money to put in anything, but I thought I could put a little money in this. And I look at it, and I thought, I'm not sure it's worth the dinner to have the sales pitch. But, you know, the psalm that I just read, you know, put trust in God rather than princes, trust in God rather than man, whatever the case may be. The psalm describes a person in the Bible that I want to cover today. As I said, this psalm describes a person in the Bible. And I think this quote that I just read describes this man quite well. Now, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who is a famous, Ralph Waldo Emerson was a famous author, poet, back in, I believe, the 1800s. He made a comment, and I thought this was an interesting comment. He said, a weed, now, we all have a lot of weeds. You know, I had my flower bed, or whatever you want to call it, kind of cleared out and earlier this year. But with all the rain, the weeds are already back, taking back over. So you almost have to continue to do it. But a weed, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, is a plant that is probably not misunderstood. So because if you look in the dictionary, a weed is considered a plant, but... Man, these weeds can be a problem, can't they? So some would describe this man we're going to look at today as a weed. But God didn't see it that way. God saw this gentleman as a beautiful plant, just needed some help over time. Now, here's a few points on the man we're going to look at today. He had a lot of problems. We'll see, he had a lot of issues. He was a cross, I guess you could say, between strength and weakness. There was a lot of strength in this man. This man, although he didn't want to admit it, he had some weaknesses. Pretty glaring weaknesses, I think you'll notice. I guess you could say he was a cross between stardust and mud. Sometimes he looked up there at all he could do, and other times you just felt like he was stuck in the mud. He was almost a tragic figure, but yet he had moments of greatness. He was aggressive. He's like a bull in a china shop. When he was around, though, everybody knew it. He was rash. He was quick to act. He was confident. But this, like this psalm I read, his confidence was not grounded well enough in God. But his confidence, in many cases, was about himself. And I think if you got a bulletin, you probably saw the title. But it's about Peter. We're going to take a look at the Apostle Peter today. It's probably the most, well, I won't say the most, but one of the two or three, other than Christ, most famous men in the New Testament. You know, I put him up there with Paul and a few others. But Peter was very, very famous. So let's take a look at Peter today. Spend a little time just dealing with him. And I think a good place to start is the call of Peter, and that's found over in John chapter 1, the Gospel of John chapter 1. So I want to take a little time and see how this man that could be so confident at times could almost be so tragic at times. This man that you could feel sorry for the way he was acting at times actually had many, many, many good points. You know, we're all a work in progress, but Peter certainly was one. So in John chapter 1, verse 35, we see again the next day, and if you go through parts of chapter 1 and chapter 2, even part of chapter 3, not so much, not really just chapter 1 and 2, we basically see 3 days, three little events, three things that happen on various days. But this verse 35 is really day 3 of this train of days they talk about. But the next day, this is John the Baptist, not John the Apostle. John stood with two of his disciples. John the Baptist had disciples, as you know. But John stood with two of his disciples and looking at Jesus. John the Baptist said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." Man, I've often wondered how he would know to say this. But he said, "There he is, the Lamb of God." And two of his disciples heard him speak, and they, two of his disciples, followed Jesus. Now, verse 38, Jesus turned and seeing them, these two disciples, said to them, "What are you seeking?" And they said, "Rabbi," which is to say teacher, "where are you staying?" And Jesus said to them, "Come and see." So they came, they saw where he was staying, and they remained with him that day. Now it was about the 10th hour. Who were these disciples of John? Well, it says in verse 40, one of the two disciples that heard John speak and followed him was Andrew. Who was Andrew? Simon Peter's brother. So Andrew, one of the disciples, was Simon Peter's brother. So he first went and found his own brother, Simon. This is Peter, Simon Peter. So Andrew went and found Peter. And he said, "We found the Messiah," which is translated to Christ. So Andrew was very excited about this. Now he brought him. Brought who? Brought Peter to Jesus. Now when Jesus looked at him, he said, "You're Simon the son of Jonah. You shall be called Cephas," which is translated a stone. So verse 41, the Jews were looking for a Messiah. Now, they didn't understand that the Messiah was going to suffer first. They were looking for a Messiah that was going to rescue them, release them from the Roman rule. They thought he'd be a mighty deliverer, and he is, but they didn't understand what was coming first. So there we see the first example of Peter. So moving on here, verse 43, the following day. So the next day, Jesus wanted to go to Galilee, and he found Philip. And he told Philip, he said, "Follow me, Philip." Well, Philip was from Bethsaida. Philip was from Bethsaida, which was the city of Andrew and Peter. So if Philip was from Bethsaida, if Andrew was from Bethsaida, and Peter was from Bethsaida, does anything about that town strike you? Well, let's keep your place right here, but let's turn over to Matthew chapter 11 for a moment, because this town had an interesting history. Matthew 11, just breaking into a point, here's Jesus speaking, verse 20, 21, and 22. So when Jesus got rather upset, He began to upbraid the cities which most of his mighty works had been done in, because they would not repent. Well, who were these cities that he had saw so many mighty works? Well, he said, "Woe to you, Chorazin, and woe to you, Bethsaida." So where Peter grew up, where Andrew, Philip grew up, a lot of miracles were done there. But yet the people didn't seem to catch it that much. He said, for if these mighty works had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago. But I say to you, it would be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than you. Then he upbraids Capernaum, which is another place Jesus spent a lot of time in. So we see there the call of Peter. Let's turn over to Luke chapter 5. Let's see some more about this. Just hitting some points here. If you had a harmony of the Gospels, it would basically go right along. But over in Luke 5, we see another situation here. Beginning in verse 1. Now so it was, as the multitudes pressed about him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret. And he saw two boats standing by the lake, but the fishermen had gone from them and were washing their nets. Then he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's. So here's Jesus. So he already had met Simon, evidently, it would appear so. From John 1, so he knew Simon to some degree. And he got in one of the boats with Simon. He asked him to put a little further out from land, and he sat down. And he taught the multitudes from the boat. Now when he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, which is Peter, Simon Peter, also Cephas, the same person, launch out into the deep and lay down your nets for a catch. But Simon answered and said, Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. And quite frankly, the best time to fish was at night in this area to catch fish. So we've caught all night. We hadn't caught anything. Nevertheless, at your word, I'll let down the net, because he had seen some things. So they let down the net. When they had done this, they caught a great multitude of fish, and the net was even breaking. And so they signaled to their partners in the other boat. The partners in the other boat. So there were two boats. To come and help them. And they came, they filled both the boats so much that the boats began to sink with all the fish. And when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' feet and said, Depart from me, I'm a sinful man, O Lord. So Peter, he knew his frailties, but he had so many good points. Why else would Jesus want to use him except for what all he saw? For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of the fish they had taken. Now, who else was there? Well, there was James and John, sons of Zebedee, two more apostles. John, the one who wrote the Gospel of John, sons of Zebedee. They were partners with Simon. So they were fishermen too. So a lot of these disciples, not necessarily and probably not all of them, in fact, not all of them, but many of them knew each other. They were in work together. And Jesus said, Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you're going to not catch fish, but men. So when they had brought their boats, they forsook all and followed him. They didn't just suddenly out of the blue follow him. They had come to know him and seen things. They followed him. Now Christ, he knew Peter had faults like we all do. He knew Peter was, as Peter said, a sinful man. Of course, who couldn't say that about themselves? But for the present, I think Jesus, you could say, just accept Peter as he was. Now, Peter was rash. He meant well, but he acted so quickly without thinking a situation through. Now, I could spend, you know, more time than we have in this sermon, some of the examples, but I think I would encourage you to consider the Gospel of Mark, because oftentimes, even though Mark wrote the Gospel, it's often called the Gospel of Peter, because probably most real scholars, not just out there looking for things, but most will say that Peter gave Mark most of the material for the Gospel of Mark. Well, let's just look at two or three, four examples in Mark of Peter and how he acted and how he was so quick. If he would have just sat back and waited and not just blow off the handle, he would really probably have been a lot better off. A lot of things that happened to him probably could have been resolved a little better. But over in Mark chapter 1, here's an example, verse 35. Now in the morning, having risen a long while before the daylight, he, Jesus, went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. So here's Jesus out praying. But Simon and those who were with him, they were searching for him, searching for Jesus. And when they found him, they said, and I'm sure this is probably Peter, everybody's looking for you. In other words, what are you doing here? Get out here. And Jesus was praying. Jesus said to them, let's go to the next town that I may preach there also. In other words, he'd preached in this town. I'm sure he'd heal some people. In fact, if you go up, verse 32, 33, and 34, it mentions in the evening how they brought the sick and demon-possessed to him, and he healed them, where the whole town was gathered together. And in verse 34, he healed many who are sick with various diseases. He cast out these demons, and he didn't allow the demons to speak because they knew him. And then Peter and the other disciples, where are you? Well, he was praying to his Father. Sort of a little example of Peter there. Let's look at Mark 9, Mark chapter 9. Yeah, there are numerous others, but thought I'd try a few here. This is the transfiguration when Jesus brought just a few of the disciples, three of them actually, Peter, James, and John. Remember, they were all fishermen together. Verse 2 of Mark 9, now after 6 days of this particular period where Jesus had said some things, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, and he led them up to a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. I mean, I can't describe except it tells what it looked like here. Verse 3, his clothes became shining, exceedingly white like snow, such as no launderer on earth could whiten them. So he was shining. He was transfigured before them. And Elijah appeared to them with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus, or a vision, not that they were raised from the dead, but a vision. And Peter, they were all pretty much struck with what's going on here. But Peter, good old Peter, had to say something. Because Peter, James, or John, I'm sure, really knew what to say. But Peter said, Rabbi, it's good for us to be here. Let us make three tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Why did he say this? Didn't even make a whole lot of sense. Well, the next verse explains it. Because he didn't know what to say. Because they were greatly afraid. It's like they'd seen a ghost or something. So he didn't know what to say, so he just blurted out, because that's good old Peter. Then we could read about the transfiguration, but didn't know what he was to say, so he just talked. You know, we all tend to do that from time to time. And Proverbs 17:28 mentions, keep quiet and you'll appear wise. Sometimes if we just hold our tongue, we'll appear a lot wiser than if we blurt things out. And I'm sure that I've failed in that area more than I like to think about. We're going to come back to Mark here in a minute. But let's go over to Matthew now. Let's look at a couple other examples. Matthew 14. Matthew 14. Now, a lot of these are found in two or three of the Gospels, but I think Matthew 14 probably describes it probably the best. In verse 22, you'll know this story about Peter walking on water. Verse 22, immediately Jesus made, and this is right after what? After Jesus had fed the 5,000. And if you want to know, there's only one miracle that is in all four Gospels, and that's the feeding of the 5,000. He also fed 4,000 one time, but this is the feeding of the 5,000. The meeting with Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on a mountain by himself to pray. Seems like it's something you see here a lot with Jesus, obviously. Hopefully we see the point here for ourselves. And when evening had come, he was alone there. Jesus was alone. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea. It was tossed by the waves, and the wind was contrary. So it was beating around. The wind was blowing the boat around. Now, on the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. He was walking on water. When the disciples saw him walking in the sea, they were troubled. They said, "It's a ghost." They cried out for fear. They couldn't imagine someone walking on the water. And then they realized who it was. It was Jesus. Because immediately Jesus spoke and said, "Be of good cheer. It's I. Don't be afraid." But Peter, now here is an example of Peter's faith. Peter answered and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So it took quite a bit of faith for Peter to walk out there on that water, didn't it? Jesus said, "Come." Peter started walking. And when Peter come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. Who wouldn't be? Now, it's easy to discount Peter being afraid, but I didn't see any of the other disciples saying, "Let me walk on the water." So Peter trusted in Jesus. He started walking on the water. It's a miracle. Then he began afraid. He was afraid, and he began to sink, and he cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, caught him, and said, "Oh, have you a little faith? Why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Those that were in the boat, they came and they worshipped him, said, "Truly, you've got to be the Son of God." So, again, it's easy to look at Peter and think, why did you doubt? He had the faith to at least start. Let's look at Matthew 16. Christ loved all the disciples, just like he loves all mankind, but he really loved his disciples. But man, he really loved Peter, because Peter had so many good points. But in verse 13 of Matthew 16, when Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, and he said, "Who do men say that I the Son of Man am?" Who do people actually think I am, is what he asked them. Some said, "Well, some say you're John the Baptist," but John the Baptist had died. "Some say you're Elijah," but Elijah had died. "Some say you're Jeremiah, or one of the prophets," but of course, as I said, Jeremiah had died, had he not. "But who do you say that I am?" Jesus asked. Peter said, "You're the Christ." Remember when Andrew said, "We found the Messiah"? "You're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said, "Blessed are you, Simon, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father, which is in heaven. He revealed it to you." Now, if you read in the logic here, the very next chapter, as we have chapters, is where we see the transfiguration. The same thing we read about over in earlier. So Peter, he meant well. He loved Jesus. But he had this major problem. that we're going to have to look at here. Major problem. that Peter had. So we're over in Matthew 16. We just read where Peter said Jesus is the Christ. But let's look at what happened in verse 21 to 23 as we have verses here. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, that he must suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and that he must be killed. Like they comprehended this into this point. And that he would be raised again the third day. And when he said this, what did Peter do? Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him and say, "Far be it from you, Lord. This isn't going to happen to you. What? You're not going to die?" Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan." Now, he didn't mean Peter was Satan, but that attitude of Satan, of just thinking you know a lot more than you may know. He said, "You're an offense to me, this attitude, for you're not mindful of the things of God, but of the things of man." Peter, as I said, he meant well. He loved Jesus. But he had a major problem. And I think you could say that major problem, he wasn't converted yet. He wasn't converted yet. So let's look at Passover night. Let's pass through a few things. Let's look at Passover night. Well, Passover night, Peter felt so strong. He had seen the crowds mobbing, basically, Christ and the disciples. He had heard all this praise. He saw, you know, when they put the palm leaves down and was cheering on Jesus and, of course, the disciples. He'd seen all these many, many miracles that Christ had performed. He truly believed in Jesus. It all began so innocently. John chapter 13. John chapter 13. Little did Peter or any of the other disciples know what a momentous 24 hours was about to be in their lives. Now, over in John 13, verse 3, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, so Jesus knew exactly what was about to happen, that he was come from God and he was going to God. Jesus had come from the Father. He was going back to God the Father. Jesus rose from supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel, girded himself. And after that, he poured water into a basin. And he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with a towel with which he was girded. Then he came to Simon Peter to wash his feet. And Peter said, "Lord, are you washing my feet?" Well, to Peter, Jesus was his hero. "Wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "What I'm doing, you don't understand right now. But you will know after this. You'll understand later." Peter said, "You shall never wash my feet." Not because he thought that was demeaning for his hero to wash his feet. "You'll never wash my feet." And Jesus said, "If I don't wash you, you have no part in me." And Simon, here's the old rashness again. Simon said to him, "Lord, then not only my feet, but also my hands and my head. Wash me all over." Jesus said, "He who is bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. You are clean, but not all of you are clean." He was referring to Judas, who was going to betray him. "For he knew who would betray him. Therefore he said, 'You are not all clean.'" Now then it really started to happen. Let's turn over to Luke 22. So Peter felt pretty strong. Here over in Luke 22. Again, I could go to any gospel, but I'm trying to just point out a few of the points that would be the most clear. So after all of this, or on that night, verse 31 of Luke 22, the Lord said, "Simon, Simon," talking to Peter, of course, He said, Satan has asked for you. Satan wanted to destroy Peter. Satan wants to destroy you. Satan wants to destroy any Christian and what they stand for. But evidently, Satan specifically asked for Peter. Remember Job and other cases, things like that? He says, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you like wheat. But I prayed for you, Peter, that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned, now look at other translations. I think the King James, this is the New King James, says, when you are converted, when you really get it, Peter, when you've returned to me, I want you to strengthen the brethren. Because he knew Peter was about to have a big fall. And he knew it was going to be a traumatic event, like traumatic events. But he said, Peter said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. I'm not afraid, basically is what he's saying. Then Christ said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day before you deny me three times that you even know me. Christ knew Peter wasn't converted yet, but Peter didn't know it. Peter didn't get it. Let's look at Mark 14. Keep your place in Luke 22. We're coming right back, but look at Mark 14. Adds a little bit to this situation. Verse 27. Then Jesus said to the disciples, or the apostles, and this is right when he instituted the New Testament Passover, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this very night. For it's written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. And after I have been raised, I'm going to go before you to Galilee. And Peter said, even if everyone else be made to stumble, I won't stumble. Jesus said, assuredly, I say to you that today, even this very night, before the rooster crows twice, you're going to deny me three times. And Peter spoke more vehemently and said, if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And all the others said likewise. Now we see, I guess you could say, the fall of Peter. Back to Luke 22. Dropping down to verse 47, so they left, they're out. By the Mount of Olives. And in verse 47 through 50, while he was still speaking, behold, a multitude, and he who was called Judas, the one who betrayed Christ, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. Jesus said, Judas, are you going to betray the Son of Man with a kiss? When those around him saw what was going on, they said, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Well, who was that that cut off the ear of the high priest? Keep your place in Luke 22. Let's turn over to Matthew 18. We'll see who it was. I'm sure you already know. John 18, verse 10 and 11. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it, struck the high priest's servant, and cut off his right ear. He even mentions the name of the servant. His name was Malchus. Then Peter said, Jesus said to Peter, put away your sword in its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me? Then the detachment of troops and captain and the officers came and arrested Jesus, and they bound him. They bound him up. Luke 22 again. Verse 54 to 58. Then having arrested him, they led him, they brought him into the high priest's house. And Peter, notice this sentence, Peter followed, but at a distance now. The faith is maybe getting a little hard. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing that as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him, looked intently at Peter, and said, "This man was also with him." But he, Peter, said, "Woman, I don't know him." The strength of faith is fading away. But he denied him, saying, "Woman, I don't know him," which I just read. Verse 58, after a little while, another saw him and said, "You're one of them." Peter said, "Man, I'm not. I'm not one of them." Now, let's come in right back here, but I want to read one verse in Mark 14. Peter, who felt he was so strong, who felt he was ready. Let's look at two verses. Verse 70 and 71 of Mark 14. Verse 70, he denied again, which we just read in Luke. A little while later, those who stood by to Peter said, "Surely you're one of them. You're a Galilean. Your speech shows it," because he had that accent. But look at the next verse. He, Peter, began to curse and swear and said, "I don't know this man." Not so strong anymore. Back to Luke 22 again, verse 60. In fact, verse 59, then about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, "Surely this fellow's with him, he's a Galilean." That's when he began to curse, which it says in Mark, or swear that he didn't know him. Then after about an hour goes by, another confidently affirmed, "Surely this man," I just read that, verse 60, Peter said, "Man, I don't know what you're saying." And immediately the cock crew, I don't think that sounds right, the rooster crowed. Look at verse 61. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter, when Jesus' eyes met Peter's eyes, Peter remembered the word of the Lord and how he had said before the rooster crows, "You'll deny me three times." And Peter, he went out and he wept bitterly. He ran away. He ran away. Now, Peter was crushed. He was shattered. Jesus quit loving Peter, but Jesus knew what was coming, and Peter thought he felt so strong. Well, Peter was not at the crucifixion. He was crushed. His confidence was shattered. Just like Peter, so many of us, our hour of trial, it's hard to not run away. It seems so much easier to run away than stand up to our trial. I remember back when I was living in New Orleans, when I started attending church, and I was at one of my customers one time, and this sales rep came in and said, "Hey, I recognize you. I see you out at the Robert E. Lee Theater on Saturday mornings. What are you doing out there with a suit on?" Well, all I had to say is, "Well, I go to church there." But I said, "See you in a minute." And I went back to the storeroom, and who knows what I did. But I didn't answer. How big a deal would that have been to say I go to church? Isn't it easy? We can feel so strong until we get in a situation. Well, the darkest day of Peter's life, of course, was when Jesus was crucified. Who knows what he was thinking that day? Who can imagine what he must have thought when he heard Jesus was dead in the grave? He was confused. He probably wondered what Jesus and the others must have thought about him. And now Jesus, who Peter thought was the Messiah, is going to rescue them from the Roman rule. He was now dead. Mark 16. Here we see Christ resurrected. I'm going to read verse 1 through 8 of Mark 16. Now when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, brought spices that they might come to anoint him, the dead body. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. And they said among themselves, "Who will roll away this stone from the door of the tomb? It was too heavy for them." And when they looked up, they saw the stone had already been rolled away. And it was a very large stone. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. They were afraid. "Who is this?" And he said to them, "Don't be alarmed. You're seeking Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He's risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him? Notice, but go and tell his disciples and Peter," who thought he was such a failure, he ran away. "Go tell the disciples," but not only the disciples, but also tell Peter, "that he's going before you into Galilee. And you're going to see him, just like he said." And they went out quickly. They fled from the tomb. They trembled. They were amazed. They said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Didn't know what to say. John chapter 20. So Peter didn't know what. Just felt like such a failure. John 20 verse 1. Again, I'm going to read some of the same things I've already read. On the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early. While it was still dark, saw the stone had been rolled away from the tomb. Then she ran, she came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved, who would have been John. And she said to them, "They've taken away the Lord out of the tomb. We don't know where they've laid him." Peter, here's old Peter. He went out with the other disciple. They were going to the tomb. They both ran together. Now, I like this verse. The other disciple outran Peter. John says, "I'm faster than Peter." John got there first. He stooped down, he's looking in. Looking inside the tomb, he saw those linen clothes lying there. Then Peter came, following him, following John. He went right on into the tomb. He wasn't going to mess around. He went right on in. He saw the linen clothes lying there and the handkerchief that had been around his head, not lying with the linen clothes, but folded together in the place by itself. Then the other disciple, which would have been John, came to the tomb first. Then he went in also. They saw, they believed. For yet they didn't know the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. They weren't sure what was going on. Then the disciples went away. They went to their own homes. They were confused. John chapter 21. Now I could go and I could read some other verses where Jesus Christ started appearing to some of the apostles. But let's go over to John 21. Again, to wrap this up, I'd say this is the turning point in Peter's life. After these things, verse 1, John 21, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And this way, this is how he showed himself. Simon Peter, Thomas, you know, we hear him called Doubting Thomas. Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, which have been James and John, and two others of his disciples were together. And Peter said, "I'm going fishing." Notice what when Jesus called him, he was a fisherman. Remember? John and James were fishermen. "I'm going fishing." They said, "Well, we're also going to go fishing with you." And they went out. Immediately they got into the boat. That night they caught nothing. Remember the night before, back those years ago, they had caught nothing. Remember they said, we toiled all night, we caught nothing. When the morning had come, Jesus stood on the shore. But the disciples didn't know that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, children, do you have any food? And they said, no, because they hadn't caught anything. He said, cast the net to the right side of the boat. You're going to find some. So they cast it. Now they were not able to draw in because of the multitude of the fish. Therefore, the disciple who Jesus loved, John, said to Peter, it's the Lord. Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, you know, he had this feel like, is he going to take me back? Is he giving up on me? Peter had to think. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he had removed it. He plunged into the sea. The other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from land, about 200 cubits, dragging the net full of fish. 200 cubits is about 100 yards. Then as soon as they had come to land, they saw a fire of coals there. They had saw fish laid on it, bread. Jesus said, bring some of this fish which you've just caught. Peter went up and dragged the net full of fish. I don't know if this has any meaning or not, but it was 153 fish. There were so many, though, the net still wasn't broken. And Peter, or Jesus, said, come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? But they knew it was the Lord. They knew it was Jesus. Jesus came, took the bread, gave it to them, likewise the fish. It's now the third time that Jesus had shown himself to the disciples after he had raised from the dead. So I could go back and show the other two, but that's not the point of this sermon. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Do you love me more than these? And he said, well, yes, Lord, you know I love you. And Jesus said, well, feed my lambs. Then Jesus, the second time, said, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he said, yes, Lord, you know I love you. And the second, then Jesus said, tend my sheep. Then he said to him a third time, how many times did Peter deny Jesus that night? Three times. Then he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Simon, or Peter, was grieved because he said it to him a third time. You know, he had to be thinking about how he denied him not that long ago. Peter was grieved because he said that the third time. Ask him, do you love me? And Peter said, Lord, you know all things. You know everything. You know I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. Then Jesus said something else. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, Peter, when you were younger, you girded yourself, you walked wherever you wanted to go, and when you were old, when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands and another will gird you and carry you where you don't want to go. And this is signifying the death of Peter. Evidently, we feel, tradition feels, that he died on a stake, just like Jesus Christ did, except the tradition says Peter, when he was crucified, asked to be crucified upside down because he didn't feel he was worthy to be crucified right side up. That's tradition. We don't know for sure, but that's we see it. This he spoke signifying by what death Peter would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said, follow me, Peter. Now we see a little bit of the old Peter resurfacing here for a minute. Then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, that'd be John, who also had leaned on his breast at supper and said, Lord, John was the one that asked who was going to betray him. Jesus said it about Judas. Peter, seeing John, said, but what about this man? So you're telling me I'm going to die. What's going to happen to this man? Jesus said, if I will that he remains till I come. What's that to you? You just follow me, Peter. Then the saying went out among the brethren that this disciple would not die. But Jesus didn't say he wasn't going to die. He said, what's that to you, Peter, if he lives all the way till I come back? He just said, Peter, your job is to follow me. Now, I could turn, and I won't, to 1 Peter. I could turn to Acts 1, 2, 3. Really, Peter is the prime figure for the first 11 or so chapters of Acts. Read the new Peter, the converted Peter. And I would encourage you to just take some time, read 1 Peter and 2 Peter. Peter was a changed man because he became converted and was given God's Holy Spirit. Peter was still Peter. He still had his personality. We don't change our personality totally, but we, Christians, we think about what we say. We think about how we act. And it doesn't mean we're not a Christian when we make a mistake or when we say things wrongly, but Peter was still Peter with his personality. But I think the quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson, a weed is a plant that is probably not understood. Some would see Peter as a weed. But Jesus Christ, even in his worst of times, saw him as a beautiful, beautiful plant.